Imagine discovering a 10-year-old who knows exactly how to treat a scraped knee, while most adults freeze when asked how to handle rejection or failure. This striking disconnect reveals a fundamental truth. While we've mastered physical first aid, we remain surprisingly inept at addressing our psychological wounds. Guy Winch's groundbreaking work, Emotional First Aid, transforms how we approach psychological health by offering a revolutionary premise that we should treat our emotional well-being with the same diligence we apply to physical injuries. These emotional injuries occur just as frequently as physical ones and can be equally debilitating when left untreated. In a world where mental health awareness is finally gaining momentum, learning to apply emotional first aid offers a practical framework for psychological resilience that can transform our daily lives. Rejection triggers 4 psychological wounds: emotional pain, anger, damaged self-esteem, and threats to belonging. This pain is neurologically real. Brain scans show rejection activates the same regions as physical pain, explaining why even minor rejections hurt intensely. Our brains evolved this response because social exclusion threatened survival in our evolutionary past. Rejection uniquely impairs our cognitive abilities, temporarily lowering IQ, compromising decision-making, and leading to desperate choices. It also triggers aggressive impulses, making it a greater risk factor for adolescent violence than gang membership or poverty. We tend to personalize rejections as indictments of our worth. After romantic rejections, we obsessively analyze for our critical wrong move and generalize single instances into patterns. This always happens to me. Addressing rejection requires challenging self-criticism with balanced perspectives, reconnecting with valuable aspects of your character, and replenishing social connection. Even brief friendly interactions or social snacking, engaging with photographs of loved ones or meaningful mementos, can significantly reduce rejection's negative effects. Despite unprecedented global connectivity, loneliness has reached epidemic proportions. The 2010 U.S. Census revealed that 27% of American households are single-person households, now outnumbering all other living arrangements. Yet loneliness isn't determined by quantity of relationships, but their subjective quality. Chronic loneliness extends far beyond emotional pain, causing clinical depression, sleep disturbances, and physically altering our cardiovascular, endocrine, and immune systems. Most alarmingly, loneliness poses as significant a health risk as cigarette smoking, literally shortening our lifespan. Yet unlike cigarettes, loneliness carries no warning labels. Loneliness creates a vicious cycle that makes escape difficult. It causes us to become overly critical of ourselves and others, while leading to self-defeating behaviors that further diminish our social connections. Our relationship muscles, social skills, perspective-taking abilities, and capacity for empathy weaken precisely when we need them most. Treating loneliness requires removing our negatively tinted glasses, identifying self-defeating behaviors that push people away, rehabilitating perspective-taking abilities, and creating opportunities for social connection. Volunteering provides an excellent avenue for creating social bonds. By focusing on giving rather than getting, we become less self-conscious and more connected. Loss and trauma inflict 3 psychological wounds: disrupting our identity, challenging our assumptions about the world, and disconnecting us from meaningful relationships and activities. The initial period after loss brings paralyzing distress and painful firsts, first meal or holiday without the lost person or security. While pain typically diminishes after 6 months, improper healing risks having grief consume our identity. Recovery progresses from managing emotional pain to reconnecting with lost aspects of self and finally finding meaning. There is no universal right way to cope. Some benefit from discussing experiences, while others recover better by not dwelling on them. Finding meaning is essential for recovery, occurring through 2 phases: sense-making, integrating events into our worldview, and benefit-finding, identifying positive outcomes. Many find purpose by taking action related to their loss, creating foundations, educating others, or supporting those with similar experiences. Guilt becomes a psychological villain when it persists, appearing as unresolved guilt, survivor guilt, and separation guilt. People typically experience 2 hours daily of mild guilt, 5 hours weekly of moderate guilt, and 3.5 hours monthly of severe guilt. Excessive guilt creates paralyzing distress that hampers our ability to focus on our needs, leading to self-punishment. This Dobby effect, named after Harry Potter's self-punishing house elf, occurs when we feel responsible for harm we cannot compensate for. Unresolved guilt poisons authentic communication. We experience guilt in waves that peak during interactions with the offended person, causing us to avoid both the topic and eventually the person. The most effective remedy is repairing relationships through apologies that include expressing regret, saying I'm sorry, requesting forgiveness, validating feelings, offering atonement, and acknowledging violated expectations. When forgiveness from others isn't possible, self-forgiveness becomes necessary, not by condoning our actions, but by taking responsibility while allowing ourselves to move forward. Unlike productive self-reflection, rumination picks at emotional scabs, preventing healing and causing deeper psychological wounds. This creates a self-reinforcing cycle. The more we ruminate, the sadder we become, which fuels further rumination. Rumination drains mental energy, impairing attention, concentration, problem-solving, and motivation. Studies show women with ruminative tendencies delay seeking medical attention for breast lumps, while patients with these tendencies show poorer compliance with treatment plans. To break free, adopt a self-distanced perspective, seeing yourself as an outside observer, which promotes insights and closure. This approach reduces emotional pain, lowers blood pressure, and decreases rumination frequency. When thoughts persist, distraction works effectively. Engaging in absorbing activities like exercise, socializing, or puzzles disrupts rumination and restores clear thinking. Even brief mental exercises like Sudoku can interrupt the cycle and improve mood. Despite popular belief in venting anger, scientific studies consistently show this approach is harmful. People who hit punching bags while thinking of someone who angered them actually felt angrier afterward. The most effective strategy is reframing, changing our interpretation of events to make them less infuriating. Just as we discover which physical pain relievers work best for our bodies, we must identify which emotional first aid treatments are most effective for our individual psychological makeup. Through trial and error, we can refine our choices and make future emotional healing efforts more effective. Teaching children these practices could create a generation of emotionally resilient people who recover from hardships more completely and enjoy greater life satisfaction than today's average person. Whether facing rejection, loneliness, loss, guilt, rumination, failure, or low self-esteem, we now have evidence-based tools to treat these wounds before they develop into more serious psychological conditions. The revolution in mental health care begins with recognizing that emotional wounds deserve the same attention as physical ones. By practicing emotional first aid with the same diligence we apply to physical health, we build resilience that transforms not just our individual lives, but our relationships and communities. Our psychological well-being isn't a luxury. It's essential maintenance that determines how effectively we navigate life's inevitable challenges and how deeply we connect with others along the way.